Hey everyone, and welcome back to Scorncast, the official podcast of the Pop Scorn movie blog, which can be found at scornpop.blogspot.com. This is Jasper, I've been known to dip it low on occasion, and joining me per the terms of our blood oath is Ghostface Milla, a writer at the Roundtable music blog. You can read him and download his weekly mixes at www.theroundtableonline.com. On this episode, we'll be talking about Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger Tides, yet another sequel to the 2003 surprise blockbuster that finds Johnny Depp's Captain Jack Sparrow racing Ian McShane's Captain Blackbeard to the mystical Fountain of Youth. It makes sense. They're not getting any younger. Roll that trailer.
You can guide an expedition. You are Jack Sparrow. There should be a captain in there somewhere.
There's the Jack I know.
There'll be dangers along the way. Firstly, mermaids. Zombies.
Blackbeard.
The pirate all pirates fear.
Captain, I wish to report a mutiny. I can name fingers and point names.
Perfect.
Steady as she goes.
We've fallen behind.
Fly to the bitter end! Bring the mermaid!
You're killing her. I'm a bad man.
Is that it?
I think so.
So, Ghostface, we were talking about this movie off mic, and you mentioned you'd only seen the first movie and not parts 2 or 3. So I wondered if you would let me bring you up to speed.
Yes, please.
Okay. So basically, here's what you missed. Keira Knightley pouted a lot. There was like a 16-hour battle between a couple ships while circling a whirlpool. And then Orlando Bloom took on the curse of Davy Jones, which goes something like this. He has to remain at sea except for one day every 10 years, which is probably how often you should be exposed to Orlando Bloom. Just kidding. But yeah, a lot of people might be turned off by another installment of the series because of how the second and third parts weren't terribly well received. So I wondered, as someone who has only seen the first movie a long time ago, how this one worked for you.
I would say it didn't work. I mean, so to be perfectly honest, the first one didn't really work for me. I found it entertaining, but I hate like swashbuckling stuff. It's very rare that I'll like a movie that, you know, is from this time period. But no, but this one felt like the first movie had died, and then, like, you know, that soul had gone to heaven, and someone took its skeleton and like walked it around the room or something, like made it interact with people. It's kind of like all there, but it's like not there at all. There was like no soul at all.
I think that the first movie is fine. I don't really get how people are incredibly in love with it, but I think that it's a case where it's that central performance of Johnny Depp is so not what you expect to find in a movie like this, and that sort of makes it endurable for all 2.5 hours of it. One of my favorite things about the first movie was just imagining all the Disney executives screening the raw footage of Johnny Depp as Jack Sparrow mincing around like a shit-canned bobblehead figurine and being all Tim Gunn about it. Like, this concerns me.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of like the beauty about the first one is really Johnny Depp. And, you know, they've kind of milked that cow dry, I think.
Yeah.
Like, because it was such a... It wasn't even that much of a 180 or anything like that for Disney, but it was kind of a departure to have such a like interesting kind of like sexually, and well, I wouldn't say sexually ambiguous, but like very effeminate, like flirtatious, you know, like just kind of crazy character. You know, when he started out as kind of the comic relief, and you know, he helped propel the story forward. The story was supposed to be about these two boring characters that like no one really cared about. You know, he was fun and he was like peppered among it, but then I think in this one it was really all about him, and so he was forced to do both the serious scenes and the not serious scenes, and like, you know, the serious scenes, they didn't really work for me just as far as like the way this character is.
The first three movies span 7 hours and 42 minutes. And this is sort of an attempt with this newest one to flesh out a character who kind of just hung out in that 7 hours and 42 minutes. Like, he wasn't the hero. He wasn't the villain. He's just kind of there in, like, 80% of the movie's shots. And he's sometimes, like, only there to comment on how ridiculous what's going on around him is without actually literally saying, wow, this sure is some crazy shit. So it's weird that they finally have decided to take this character and give him his own movie. Or I guess actually it's not weird at all. Like, it kind of makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense, but I feel like they chose the wrong path for him to take. Like, he still kind of stumbles upon, like, what's going on as far as, like, in the plot of the movie, and he still kind of has to follow people as he did in the other one and play, like, that, like, don't point the gun at me, I'll do it kind of game. I don't know, there's something about, like, the action scenes or, like, when he, like, stands up to do stuff, whereas, like, in the other ones it felt more, like, accidental and, like, funny. At least in the first one, there was more, like accidental kind of choreographed timing to his, like, action scenes. Not to say that he wasn't, I guess, skilled, I don't know, but yeah, I just felt like in this one he was, like, too in control and too, like, amazing. I don't know, I just didn't believe half of it, you know, like, it was just kind of like, meh.
One of the weirder things about this, I'm trying not to say weird so much,
yeah,
but I'm going to do it anyway. One of the weirdest things about this movie is how you have Jack Sparrow as the focus of a movie, finally, after hanging out in the first three, and you don't really learn anything about him, do you?
Yeah, I guess that's what I mean. Like, even in the serious scenes, he's like, I don't know, it was more about, like, Penelope Cruz's character and, like, how he let her down than actually understanding, like, why he let her down, or, like, why any of that stuff in his past, or what has he been doing since, you know. And it was just, obviously they wrote, you know, this as an afterthought, but it just seemed, like, so thrown together, and then they probably just relied a lot on Johnny Depp to, like, fill in that gap emotionally. But I think for these movies, they're kind of just a paycheck, you know, or it's something he wants to show his kids, so I don't think he's thinking that seriously about them anymore.
Yeah, one of the weirder points about Penelope Cruz's character is that she is this love interest for Johnny Depp, and a point is sort of made that she was at Nun Academy when she was younger, and Jack corrupted her, and she wants to finally have her revenge. But that's not really of any true consequence until the movie kind of fleetingly brings it up and then, like, disregards it because here's some more bells and whistles and some more action to trot out, right?
Yeah, and I was really sick of, like, their back-and-forth interactions, and, like, I felt like it was not, like, fun for me to, like, watch them interact, to, like, watch them dance and have her, like, lie to him, but, like, lie the truth, and then, like, lie to him for real. I couldn't even follow it, and it wasn't, like, in a, ooh, that's an interesting twist of events. It was, like, that's just bad writing, I feel. Like, I didn't really get anything out of, like, her actually loving him. I couldn't really tell if she was actually, you know, or her caring for him or any of that stuff. It just seems phoned in.
Well, that's one of the problems with a movie where every character has an agenda that is buried within another agenda, which is might be buried within a third agenda. Like, you don't really know who's being honest with whom, and there's no real reason to, like, care about anything.
Yeah, it wasn't like, oh, I want to find out. It was just like, just tell me which one's the right one, because I'm tired of caring, you know, like, I mean, it was like, I think it was like the third scene that they had together where they were like talking like, well, are you going to get Blackbeard back? Or like, are you going to get me back? And she was like, I'm going to get the guy who did me wrong back or something. And I was just like, okay, so can we just do this already and like stop talking about it? Because it wasn't like it was upping the ante. It was just rehashing it over and over again.
Yeah, and for two actors who are known for giving really lively performances in movies, I felt like you're right. There's a real lack of chemistry going on here. And to me, the spiciest stuff between them was their last scene together.
Yeah, when he's like, spoiler alert, when he's like leaving her on the island, right?
Yeah, yeah, and like how she reacts to that and everything. I was like, why couldn't this have been the thing that went on between them for the whole movie?
Yeah, and even that too. I mean, I was like not really entertained by that, but I was finally like, wait, what? Where did this come from?
Yeah.
It was only because he's leaving her, but I was also kind of like, why couldn't they have been more like this before? And I think it was just because, you know, it wasn't written out in the words. You know, like, everything was just very much, there was nothing behind what they were saying, it was only what they were saying. That's kind of where I was just, like, disappointed, because I think a movie like this can only be good when there's just, like, little hints of the character. characters behind what they're saying, and then, like, you know, that supports the action, or the action supports that. And I found, like, nothing neither in that. Well, I'm sure you want to talk about the action, but I was just, like, so yawning through half of the movie.
Through the action?
Yeah, I just thought it was, like, so, like, poorly kind of choreographed or whatever. Just, like, I think you had actually said this to me before, you know, that if anything was going for the other movies, it's that they were kind of, like, well-directed and that the action was exciting and entertaining. So I was looking forward to that in this one. But it just, like, things would happen. You know, Jack Sparrow would kind of, like, tie up, like, 9 guards with, like, a rope, like, around a palm tree. And, like, you know, I just felt like it could have been choreographed really well and could have been shot really interestingly to be, like, oh, that's funny, or like, oh, wow, that was really badass. And instead it was just like, wait, what's going on? He's, like, running around, and then, he tied them up? Oh, all right, well, that happened. I couldn't really tell what was going on sometimes, or I was just, like, wasn't excited by the way that they portrayed it.
I honestly don't even remember much in the way of action happening in this movie. I think the only like real memorable sequence that stands out in my mind is this sequence where they sort of reveal the mermaids, or I guess the true nature of the mermaids, how they're deadly or whatever.
Right.
There's kind of like a scene where they're trying to trap a mermaid because of course they need a mermaid's tears to unlock the Fountain of Youth or whatever. And there a bunch of people are sitting in boats trying to trap a mermaid in a net, I think. And the mermaids are lulling the guys in the boats into complacency, and they're sort of like putting them under their glamour, and then they attack. And that's honestly the only big, except for the end, of course, where there's like a bunch of sword fights and stuff, but that's the only thing that I really remember. And it is weird. See, I said weird again. It is weird because in the first couple movies, which I rewatched before watching this one and slept through a lot of them, the one thing that struck me about the earlier movies is how well-directed they are in terms of their action scenes. Like, Gore Verbinski, who directed the first three, I think really has a flair for these, like, larger-than-life, ridiculous action scenes where you've got, like, three guys fighting on a giant water wheel that's rolling down to a beach. And it's fun, and it looks fun, and it's something to watch instead of all these double crosses and triple crosses that you don't really care about. So, I mean, I think that's really lacking here. I don't think that Rob Marshall, he's a good visual director, and this movie is very pretty, but at the same time, there's not a lot going on here that's particularly exciting.
Yeah, and you wouldn't think that because he's coming from the stage, so you would think that he would be able to handle a lot of things going on at once in an interesting way, but it's almost like it's hindered him too much because he really wants to make sure you know, or he knows where you're looking. So, like, a lot of the stuff that's kind of going on in the background, or, like, that's not, you know, totally the center, is just kind of, like, going on. It's not, like, really interesting or anything. So, yeah, a lot of the bigger action pieces were kind of just, like, boring for me. But, like, some of the smaller ones, even if it's just, like, you know, Jack Sparrow running around, like, there was still something just about the way that they were framed and cut, I think, too, that I just, like, I wasn't like, oh, whoa, that's going to happen. Oh, no, that thing's going to blow up. I was just like, okay, all right, and then he did that, okay. Like, it was very, like, matter of fact, and it wasn't, like, building up any sort of, like, suspense or excitement. I think, actually, one of the most exciting things was, like, the beginning when he, like, broke out, and even that was, like, so, I don't know, it just felt like it was, I think I'd actually felt like I'd seen it in, like, one of the other movies, even though I haven't seen them. So I was just kind of like, oh, this is, like, that same scene where he, like, you know, it just, everything about it felt so familiar. That was, like, the only real action piece that I remembered. Even the mermaids, I think I kind of just forgot. Nothing really stuck out.
In watching these movies over again, I sort of noticed something that struck me as a little bit odd. One of my general annoyances, and also, I guess, general bemusements with movie franchises is when they happen to films that are big surprise hits, and then sequels are rushed into production. And with films like this, they suddenly come up with this hyper-complex mythology so that they can stretch out the story for however many movies are in the planned batch of sequels. And I like my storytelling really neat and tidy, so this series is odd for me. So, okay, in the first movie, you have cursed Aztec gold that turns pirates into skeleton warriors, which I can totally get down with. But I feel like these characters greet that development with a lot of surprise and awe. But then in the second and third movies, you find out that these same characters who were weirded out by the cursed Aztec gold were previously using magic or whatever to mystically bind the goddess of the sea into a mortal human body. And then the East India Trading Company was in league with a sea monster whose heart existed outside of his body, etc., etc. And now people are talking about how mermaids' tears are needed to activate the Fountain of Youth, like it ain't no thing, like mermaids actually exist. And
then, right, yeah.
And then Blackbeard, who we haven't even talked about yet, but we should oh, do right. that. Blackbeard's name alone strikes fear into the hearts of pirates because he's the biggest, baddest pirate ever, but no one in the series has ever brought him up before, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's magical. His sword is like some weird thing that can control ropes like they were snakes.
Yeah, yes. And his beard is perpetually smoldering, right?
Yeah, well, I didn't understand that.
I didn't get it.
Like, he just primped before he went out. But yeah, his beard like was like burning embers at the end. That's right, very strange.
Right before every take, Ian McShane was struck by lightning.
Exactly. Yeah, I didn't... I actually liked his performance. I thought he was really good, but I thought that character was just so, like... I mean, it was, I don't know, everything in that movie had been done, or just, you know, they kind of ripped something apart. And he's playing kind of an iconic character, and he added some levels to it. I don't know, maybe it was more of just his interactions with Penelope Cruz, and it was kind of on her, but I didn't get their, like, father-daughter thing at all.
I mean, it was so much a non-entity that I kept waiting for them to be revealed to not be father and daughter.
Right, or something.
Some weird twist, like, oh, I'm just pretending to be his daughter. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what purpose that would have served, but...
Yeah, because that was, like, the lie that she had told him. So it would have been at least funny if, like, the lie that she had said she was telling the truth of a lie became the truth. But then I guess that would have been too, like, Inception-y for the Disney crowd.
Yeah, and no more double crosses ever, please.
Right, yeah. Well, and the other thing, too, sorry, just quickly, about the action, is that there was so many just, like, swiping and missing and rolling, and, like, maybe that's all they can do in these sword fighting movies, but there was just so much of it. There was so much of it. I was just like, someone please hit someone with a sword. It was boring.
Or someone telepathically have a rope that ties somebody up.
Right, yeah. Well, and the other thing, too, is, like, all those guys that had, like, muskets, like, he would walk up to them and, like, punch them or hit them with a coconut. And it's like, you have a musket with a knife on it. Stab him, you know? Just found, like, half of the action scenes just so, like, bland.
Yeah, actually, let's get into this Blackbeard thing, because one of the things that I did like about this movie was that all this business with the East India Trading Company is over and done with, just because it's nice to have villains in this movie series that aren't traditionally snivelly British naval officers. So, in this movie, you get Blackbeard, who's got, like, a magic sword that can control everything about his ship, and then there's Blackbeard's crew of zombies, which, if you think about it, aren't really necessary on account of Blackbeard's magic sword. Like, why does he need a crew
right.
to begin with?
I was gonna say, I think it's so he can sleep.
Hey, that's, yeah, even Blackbeard needs sleep. His,
right.
his beard burning is like carbon monoxide, so it makes him tired all the time. You get vampire mermaids, and a lot of that is incredibly random, but I'll give them points for not having boring gentlemen in waistcoats and powdered wigs pop up every 10 minutes to provide clunky exposition.
Right.
But at the same time, I'm gonna give you a quote from Jerry Bruckheimer, who's like, you know, super producer extraordinaire of all these big summer blockbuster movies. So he said, and I'm quoting him, "Blackbeard is one of the most evil characters we've ever given you." I'm sorry, what?
Really?
Yeah, I mean, is he?
I don't think so.
No, like, he's not so bad, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's more of, like, his reputation than him actually being bad. Like, I feel like he's probably talking about that because, you know, everyone was sort of scared of him and, you know, even Jack, but I felt like he really didn't do anything to warrant that. You know, and stringing some guys up by ropes and stuff. You know, I don't think he killed, like, one person in the whole movie.
Right, and that's the thing. Like, I can see where he might have been really evil at one point in the screenwriting process, but this is such a vanilla interpretation of evil. And he does
right.
do a couple dastardly things in the course of the movie, but they're never seen on screen. They're, check me on this, but I think they're only ever really implied. And I wonder if that's because actually showing the violence would push Disney out of its comfort zone.
Yeah, I think it's because of that. I mean, it would have been nice if at least, I mean, I felt like the gun scene, when he tells his head zombie guy to take 6 guns and only leave bullets in 2 of them, you know, his kind of version of Russian roulette. I felt like that could have been more evil. Like, he could have grabbed it and, like, shot someone, and then you could have realized, like, how evil he was or something, even if it wasn't, you know, his daughter. There was definitely, like, areas where they could have shown us how evil he is. Even in, like, the room, you know, when it was just Jack and him in the room, I felt like he used a voodoo doll on him. I was like, I was expecting him to, like, grab the knife and put it up against his throat and be like, don't think I'm not watching you or something, you know, to be like he's all-knowing and all-powerful or something. Instead, he, like, uses a voodoo doll, which I thought was going to be, like, a plot trick for the whole movie, and then they, like, throw it out less than halfway into it. I was kind of like, okay.
Yeah, and I don't think they bring up, but they never really explain how Blackbeard has all these ships and bottles, right?
Yeah, they were just like, oh, it's like magic.
I want to take it back to Keira Knightley and Orlando Bloom, and I want to, which I know, it's hard, but let's do it. If I can turn one of the movie's, like, really underdeveloped passages into a positive, I would say that the first three movies got so bogged down with this Keira Knightley or Blando. I didn't mean to do that. I'm gonna try that again. The first three movies got so bogged down with the Keira Knightley, Orlando Bloom stuff. It was kind of nice that the romantic angle here is such a complete afterthought, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it adds, what, like 10 minutes of running time, which is probably why this is a half hour shorter than the last Pirates of the Caribbean movie.
Yeah, and so you're talking about the mermaid and the priest?
Yes.
Yeah, and so I actually liked them as the new Orlando Bloom, Keira Knightley thing, and although I don't want them to make any more of these movies, it probably wouldn't be that bad to watch, like, the two of them, but then I would still kind of be like, why is Jack a part of this, which, like, he has to be. You know, because, like, neither of them are pirates. It's like a mermaid, you know, and a priest. But, yeah, but I didn't think, I mean, you know, as unbelievable and afterthought-y as it was, it didn't really get on my nerves as much as I thought it was going to. Like, the second that I saw where it was going, I was kind of like, oh, this is going to be bad. And then it was so, like, light that I was like, okay, not so bad.
Yeah, it didn't take up a lot of time. It was pretty economical. I mean, you expect that by now all these movies have to have something like that happen in them. So,
right, yeah.
If this is how condensed it's going to be, then I guess I'm okay with that. Although I don't know why he names the mermaid Serena all of a sudden out of nowhere. That was kind of weird.
That was weird.
One final spoiler alert, I guess. Not that anything that happens in this movie is really that shocking, but there's a really weird sequence at the end of the movie, I said weird again, where the missionary, where the priest is mortally wounded, but he manages to free the mermaid, and the mermaid yanks him underwater to take him to the giant underwater mermaid metropolis, I guess, where mermaid magic can heal him. And I sat through the end credits of this movie, because all of these movies so far have these little post-credits bonus scenes, and I don't know, did you actually make it through the credits of this movie?
No, I contemplated sitting there, but honestly, I just didn't feel like it. Was there anything there?
Yes, there was. And it was a scene where Penelope Cruz is sitting on her, like, island prison, and she looks in the water, and she sees something floating towards her, and she runs out, and it's the voodoo doll of Jack Sparrow. And she, like, she looks at it, like, sort of, like, with an evil gleam in her eye or whatever, and then it cuts to black. But the scene that I wanted to see was, like, there could be a subtitle that says 60 minutes later, and then it shows the mermaid finally pulling the priest into the Mermaid City town square, and then she realizes that he drowned, like, an hour ago.
If only they had a sense of humor. She looks behind her, and it's a corpse just holding her hand.
It's just a hand, actually, because a shark bit it off.
Exactly.
Or,
and that would actually have more legs for the sequel, because then he could be, like, he could be a zombie, you know, he could be, like, a living dead, or she could just be in love with a corpse, which could also be kind of creepy and cool.
Or the other mermaids got really hungry and ate him.
Right, or they were like, he's not as good as you think, and I'm starving. Yeah, basically.
Yeah, I think we just wrote a better movie.
Several better movies.
So, if you were giving a grade to Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger Tides, what grade would you give it?
I'd probably give it a C.
Yeah, I would agree with you. It's straight down the middle for me. I kind of just didn't care.
Yeah, and I you know, I don't think that's too harsh a grade, because I think I've seen other movies that fit, you know, this demographic and kind of this, you know, action comedy family friendly style that I've enjoyed a lot more. So I think, you know, I probably could have gone harsher, but it had some redeeming qualities in that it looked pretty
and it had vampire mermaids.
Right, always a plus.
And that's going to do it for another episode of Scorncast. Thanks to Ghostface Milla for stopping by. Thanks to Bug for our theme music. And just a reminder, you can visit PopScorn at scornpop.blogspot.com, and you can email PopScorn at scornpop@gmail.com. And they should totally make a prequel to this movie. Penelope Cruz in Nun Academy. I would watch that.